Now, Australia, you're too fat. This is the message that lurks behind the health advice offered to us to prevent lifestyle diseases like diabetes and heart disease. And it is true that we are one of the fattest nations on earth. Almost 2 in 3 adults are overweight and 1 in 4 children. But while parents everywhere are busying themselves, getting their kids off the couch and running around outside, there really are problems that come with being on the other end of the weight spectrum too. That's the dangerously underweight end. Our next two guests have spent a lot of time with kids, adolescents and families in this situation. And together they've come up with an online tool called Feed Your Instinct for parents who suspect that their child may be developing some dangerous habits around food. Belinda Caldwell is a carer consultant at the Victoria Centre for Excellence in Eating Disorders, and Dr. Paul Denborough is the head of the Alfred Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. Very good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Paul, you deal with end-of-the-line anorexia. What does that look like?
Well, it's a really serious illness, actually, and can be life-threatening. So, I mean, one of the things about this website is the idea that what we're really keen to see is people presenting earlier, because when you get in the grips of this, of severe anorexia, it's actually very difficult to get out of. So for us, from out where I'm sitting, it's really important that people seek help earlier, because treatment is so much easier when you are able to get in at the early stage.
Okay, so actually, what do your patients look like by the time they get to you?
Well, I mean, we see the whole family, and the family is literally terrified. They're scared because they're watching usually their young teenage girl waste away in front of their eyes. So they're very, very underweight.
How underweight is very underweight?
Well, so it's, I don't know, it's probably, technically the diagnosis is less than 85% of your body weight, but sometimes they're around mid-30 kilos, 35 to 40 kilos. They're not menstruating, they're not thinking clearly, and very rigid and really adamant that there's no problem with them.
Mm. So these are seriously sick kids, mainly girls, who are worrying about food 24/7.
Correct. And their families are caught in the dilemma of what can they do about it, because as much as they are trying to feed their daughters, or usually, the girls are very anxious not to put on weight. So it becomes a major battleground.
Okay. And Deloitte Access Economics did a study in 2011 that found that eating disorders like anorexia are responsible for more deaths each year than the road toll. So, I mean, what is the death rate once it's got this bad that they've got to you?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I think the one message I'd like to give is once they get to us, there really is a really good treatment available in Victoria, so and across Australia. So most kids, the vast majority, get well. In saying that, once somebody's in the grips of serious anorexia that's been going on for a number of years, there's a high mortality in terms of suicide and medical complications of starvation. And when I say high, it is controversial, but it used to be said to be 10% of people with chronic anorexia is a fatal problem. But I think, to be honest, it feels like things have got a bit better and that treatment, the death rate's dropping, but it's still extremely serious illness. And even if it's not fatal, it can be causing, you know, psychological and depression and problems for a long time.
And Belinda, you're listening on to all this. You're a carer consultant at the Victorian Centre for Excellence in Eating Disorders, but your own daughter, Lucy, was diagnosed with anorexia at the age of 15. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yes, Lucy was diagnosed back in 2011. She developed anorexia. She started off with a trip to Nepal and lost a bit of weight over 4 weeks, and then rapidly developed the signs of anorexia and lost a lot of weight, and ended up in emergency at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne.
And so she was losing that weight. She came back and she'd obviously lost a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. It was around Christmas time that she came home. What other behaviours was she displaying?
Yeah, literally from the time she came off the plane, her behaviours were very different. She was hovering around our kitchen constantly, worrying about what we were cooking, what we were making, what we were buying from the shops. Was it healthy enough? Why were we eating this food and not that food? So she was very, Christmas kind of threw that out into stark relief, really. Mm. And then she picked up a whole lot of exercise. She was, in theory, training to do a basketball tournament at the end of January, but it just kind of went into overdrive and it was extremely excessive.
And so she became obsessed not only with the healthy food but with exercising a lot as well.
Yep.
And had anything happened to her, Belinda, to trigger that?
No, I think we now know that for a large number of these kids, they're a predisposing personality trait. She's always been quite perfectionistic. She's had anxiety before she got sick. Mm. And I think it was just the whole overseas trip plus losing the weight and, you know, we'll probably never know exactly what propelled her into that.
Mm. How hard was it to get help?
It is challenging to get help, but in some ways our story, we got help more efficiently than a lot of people. But we still had sort of three trips to the GP. We had two visits to a clinical psychologist, and this was all while she was still kind of losing weight, but we were kind of, people were focusing more on her anxiety and her OCD sort of symptoms. So we had a sort of, and it really wasn't until she sort of more or less collapsed at school one day, and then the GP did her OBS, and then it became an emergency admission to the Children's Hospital.
My guest, Belinda Caldwell, carer consultant at the Victoria Centre for Excellence in Eating Disorders, and Dr. Paul Denborough, head of the Alfred Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. Belinda, you know, you've skated over that, a couple of trips to the GP, and we didn't do too bad. A couple of trips to the GP? I mean, you knew there was something wrong. Why did it have to get to the point that the child collapses and is rushed to hospital before someone says, all right, let's deal with this?
I think what we've certainly been finding in doing the project that we're talking about today is that this is a really common experience for families. I think what happens a little bit is that the GPs can take a little bit of a watch and wait position on eating disorders. There's sort of a hesitance, I think, about exploring the idea that this might be an eating disorder. I'm not quite sure where that comes from exactly, but we certainly, our experience sort of bore that up. So every other option was kind of explored before we looked at anorexia nervosa.
The online tool you're talking about is called Feed Your Instinct. Paul, you helped to develop it. And it basically goes through and asks a bunch of detailed questions about what the child is doing in eating, well-being, thinking and feeling. But what's wrong, Paul, with watch and wait? I mean, does it matter whether or not you get help for the child 12 weeks after she gets off the plane from Nepal, or whether it takes till June, 6 months before help is received?
Oh, it really does matter. And look, I guess my take on it is that there's many teenage girls going on diets and anorexia is extremely rare. So the problem is that the majority of kids will be okay, but the problem is that for the minority, it can be a life-threatening problem. So what's really important about this is that even though it's potentially on the odds, it's unlikely to get anorexia. If you do get it, it's incredibly serious. So my opinion is that you should take all girls, really teenage girls who are going on diets, and be careful about it. It's sort of dangerous because a minority of those girls will end up extremely ill. So it is important to take action really at the first visit, to take this seriously. And that, even in that in itself, can be really helpful to girls and their families, because they're not really aware of anorexia. Most people don't really understand it. It's a complicated thing. And so just by helping people be aware of the dangers of this, even at the first visit, can be very, very helpful.
Okay. And how likely are parents to be confronted with this situation in their son?
Well, it's hard to know, because certainly at where I sit, boys are still a minority of presenting. But my understanding is more and more research is showing that boys are developing these problems, and potentially it's going a bit undetected. And so there's been some recent studies which are showing that perhaps there's an increase in eating disorders in boys, and in particular, we're probably all aware of boys being more conscious of their body in terms of building up muscle and things like that, and being more body conscious. But as well as that, it seems to be possibly an increase in younger boys of getting similar problems which have traditionally been in girls, which is more the restricting of food.
And so body image drives both young men and young women. It's part of the psychology of what's going on with anorexia. But you've also found that boys can be vulnerable if they're autistic and they've developed unusual rituals around food, and boys who've had food allergies might be vulnerable. Why would they be vulnerable?
Well, it's anything that sort of causes some restriction of food can become a bit of a habit. I don't know. So what? This is very old studies, but even if you just starve yourself, there was a very interesting study done in infants. Dodging conscription in the US, where they just starved men in a study, and by the starvation itself can cause eating disorder thinking. So anything that causes you to start severely dieting or restricting food can lead to a serious eating disorder, and that's what I've seen in kids with autism and also with food allergies. Is it becomes a habit, and then it becomes very hard to get out of once you're stuck in it.
Mm. Belinda, parents are told from day one, do not turn the dinner table into a battleground over vegetables or anything else. So at what point do you reckon they go online to Feed Your Instinct and fill out that questionnaire?
Look, I think what families are describing to us, and certainly this was our experience, is you get a real strong sense when this has gone from just sort of, teenagers having a bit of a fad and deciding to, cut out a couple of food groups because everybody else is, to it becoming something wrong. There's a level of obsessiveness and compulsiveness and distress that occurs with eating. And you really start to, a lot of the behaviours are quite subtle, but you get an overall picture of what's going on. Really interestingly, the second most common warning signs that parents reported to us in our survey that we did developing this website was an increase in social isolation and increasing anxiety. And this is what you do see with kids that are developing an eating disorder. So it's not all just about the eating or the obsessive compulsive exercise. It's a range of behaviours that you're seeing, and you start to get a strong sense that this doesn't feel right.
Mm. I actually filled it in, Belinda.
Right.
I went through the questions that start at the top. Mm-hmm. Eating, a change in eating patterns such as skipping meals, no. And there's a whole bunch of questions there, mm-hmm. avoiding families and strict rules, and suddenly you're a vegan or suddenly you've got food. The only ones I ticked there was the sudden strong preference for diet and low-fat products, which mm-hmm. is more a result of Easter chocolate, I've got to tell you. Then mm-hmm. I came to the well-being questions. Fluctuation in weight over a few weeks, again, Easter, yes. A growth spurt, well, clearly not at my age. Any evidence of vomiting? No. And there's a whole bunch of questions. Am I, taking laxatives? Thinking. We come to the thinking questions. Low self-esteem, constantly reassurance about body size. None of that. But there, I did say yes to, I wouldn't mind losing a bit of weight. And then it comes to your feeling questions that you described. Increasing social isolation. Others are judgmental, difficult talking about my emotions. No, no, no. And when I clicked, okay, tabulate the responses, it gave me a full list of yeses and nos, and it did sort of give me some pretty general advice, didn't diagnose me, about, well, anytime anything changes, you should be vigilant. What's the use of that? What do I do with that printout once I've got it, if I filled it in on behalf of a child?
Yeah, well, there are two printouts on the website.
Yes.
So there's one which is for the GP. So if once you've gone through, the tool is not a diagnostic tool.
Right.
It's really the main aim was to confirm parents' concerns, make them feel empowered to take that next step. We know that parents are going to the GP worried about their kids, but they can't describe the problem very well when they get there.
And so, they've got 10 minutes to do it sort of thing.
They've got 10 minutes to do it. So this was to kind of support families to go through and list the behaviours that they were seeing. Then they can print off a GP report, and the GP report provides not only a list of the behaviours they're observing, but then the current best practice recommendations for what the GP should do with this information if they're concerned that it's an eating disorder. Now, most of us will probably tick one or two of those things.
It doesn't mean we've got an eating disorder.
No, absolutely. So the idea really is to kind of support people, you'd be ticking a number of things. Like, there's no way you could say, if you've ticked 10 or 15 or 2. But it's just to encourage people to give them some support when they go to the GP, to have that information with them. If they're concerned enough to go to the GP, people don't go to the GP about one tiny behaviour. So your parents have to have a level of concern to be wanting to take that action in the first place. The other printout is a report for the parents, and literally that was more designed to be, you can print that off, it has got some general tips for parents who have a level of concern. But you could also, if you've only got a little bit of a concern, you could just use that report to come back in a month's time and do it again and see if any of the behaviours have increased.
All right. Feedyourinstinct.com.au. The link will be on our website. And just finally a question, Paul. To what extent are some children reacting to the obesity epidemic and the fact that we may have demonised food to some extent? Just very briefly.
Well, I think that's definitely true. I mean, they say anorexia is a culture-bound syndrome in that it's only in countries where food is plentiful and thinness is valued. So basically the real obsession about thinness and being attractive and this whole message that you've got to be thin, it must be playing a bit of a part. But I would say that my experience is that the causes of anorexia are really, it's very individual on each different case, even though we're living within that social context. It's so varied as to why somebody, one individual, might get anorexia. But I do agree. I think it is a bit of a forgotten side effect of this obsession with losing weight.
Thank you both so much for coming into the studio this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Belinda Corwell, carer consultant at the Victorian Centre for Excellence in Eating Disorders, and Dr. Paul Denborough, head of Alfred Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. Feedyourinstinct.com.au. The link will be on our website, Life Matters.